From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block. At long last, we have a royal wedding to look forward to, if we're so inclined. The British royal family has announced the engagement of Prince William to his longtime girlfriend, Kate Middleton. They're expected to marry next spring or summer. The couple held a photo opportunity today to formally introduce the woman who is likely to someday be Queen of England. Vicky Barker has the story from London.
Wearing a sapphire blue dress and the sapphire engagement ring that had been Princess Diana's, her voice barely audible above the cameras, Kate Middleton admitted the prospect of being a royal bride was daunting.
You know, hopefully I'll take it in my stride. William's a great teacher, so he'll be able to help me along the way.
The 28-year-old prince was asked why he'd waited so long to propose to the woman he's been dating since college.
The timing is right now. We're both very, very happy. And I'm very glad that I have done it.
What do they love about each other? He supports her, and she makes him laugh.
You're marrying me.
In this grainy video of a long-forgotten school play obtained by the Daily Mirror, a 13-year-old Kate Middleton is told a handsome, rich gentleman would fall in love with her.
And marry me?
And marry me, she asks. At boarding school, Middleton was said to have kept a photo of the prince in her room, something she now denies. And she later went on the same outdoor adventure course in Chile that William had attended 6 months before. Manager Rachel Humphreys remembers Middleton.
She had a certain aura, she had a certain demeanor and a certain maturity that made her stand out slightly from the other adventurers. She was extremely attractive, she was extremely popular, but she was always very in control of herself and impeccably behaved, one has to say.
Middleton applied to the same university as Prince William, St. Andrews in Scotland, and declared the same major, art history. They famously met when she modeled lingerie at a college charity event and he paid $300 for a front row seat. A number of commentators here have accused Middleton of leading an apparently aimless life since university, of only briefly working, of not pursuing any career ambitions. They seem to have missed the point. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
Last night, a surprising twist on ABC's Dancing with the Stars. America voted off
Brandy and Max.
That's right, R&B singer Brandy and Max, her professional dance partner, had been toe-to-toe in the competition with Dirty Dancing's Jennifer Grey and her partner, but Brandy was voted off last night. Instead, Bristol Palin, daughter of Sarah Palin, moved on, despite having consistently low scores from the judges.
Bristol's Argentine tango was precise but lacked intensity, keeping her near the bottom of the leaderboard for the sixth week in a row.
We thought that we would get an outside opinion of last night's result from internationally acclaimed ballroom dancer and dance instructor Pierre Dulaine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
I should say that Mr. Dulaine joins us from New York. You watched the results. Where were you and what was your immediate reaction to the result?
Well, I was at home actually watching television. I was so shocked. My words were unbelievable.
You were moved actually to email your dance instructors?
Yes, we have many, many sites that do our work, you know, for the children, and I emailed everybody. I said, unbelievable. Bristol Palin in. I just can't believe it.
To a trained eye, you would say it was unquestionable that Brandy had danced better?
Much, much, much better. With all due respect to Miss Palin, I mean, I think she has done wonderful by staying in so many weeks and learning everything she learned, and she certainly improved from where she started. But as she said herself, she's not a dancer.
As a dance instructor, what are you talking about? What are you seeing that says to you, vote that woman off the show?
Basically, I mean, she followed her partner quite nicely enough, I suppose, but her shoulders were up. She had a dull face many times. Smiling was hard for her. Her technique was not good at all. She just walked across the stage with the steps that were given to her with difficulty. And certainly for me, not pleasant to watch when you compare it to the other two ladies.
You teach kids how to dance, and I wonder if you could give Bristol Palin some advice, since she's a relative newcomer to all this, and since she's going to be in the final anyway, what would you say?
if she does get through to be a winner, then I would be horrified. That I would even be more horrified than last night. But what I would tell her to do, I suppose, is to try and relax. Her shoulders are up in her ears and to smile a bit more, to be natural about it. It's, at the moment, just go for it. Just enjoy it. Just live the last few moments and, you know, go on.
Pierre Dulaine, thank you very much for talking with us about this. Pierre Dulaine runs Dancing Classrooms. It's a program that teaches kids to dance. Dancing Classrooms was the subject of the 2005 documentary Mad Hot Ballroom.
According to you, I'm stupid, I'm useless, I can't do anything right. According to you, I'm difficult, hard to please, forever changing my mind. I'm a mask in a dress, can't show up on time, even if it will save my life. According to you, according to you.
More All Things Considered coming up right after this.
Now, as all those sequels demonstrate, the dedication of Harry Potter fans is epic, and it has made some activists wonder if they can take that fan enthusiasm and channel it into politics, NPR's Netta Ulaby reports.
31-year-old Andrew Slack used to be just an ordinary muggle, one who gave a lot of thought to parallels he saw between the social problems in Harry Potter novels and in the real world: exploitation of workers, prison abuse, media consolidation. Slack started the Harry Potter Alliance to transform fellow fans into activists. Recently, the Harry Potter Alliance threw itself a 5-year anniversary party in Boston, drawing hundreds of mostly young people.
Wizards and witches, boys and girls, there are so many of us out there who love Harry Potter and want to do more for our world.
Slack calls this group a real-life Dumbledore's Army, the fictional group of young magicians committed to fighting evil by learning practical spells.
Stupefy!
Expelliarmus!
Expelliarmus!
In the books, Dumbledore's army takes stands against repression, torture, genocide. The Harry Potter Alliance picks its causes, says Andrew Slack, by teasing out the book's politics.
We're sort of like Harry Potter rabbis or something.
Ones with a progressive bent. Fan communities may seem marginal from the outside, but they're technologically sophisticated and highly effective global networks. This group's 100,000 worldwide membership has raised enough money to donate thousands of books,
including 4,000 for a youth village in Rwanda and over 20,000 for community centers across the Mississippi Delta.
And they sent 5 cargo planes of medical supplies to Haiti after the earthquake. Kate Luby was at that party in Boston. She says her whole life used to revolve around Harry Potter.
There was a period where I could have recited the entire first book, like word for word, for the first few chapters.
Luby was not interested in other stories, like real-life ones taking place in the Congo or Darfur.
I was very apathetic about things.
She ran across the Harry Potter Alliance on fan web pages and was moved by the notion she could help make a difference. Now, she's the group's operations director.
I would say now I consider myself to be a full-fledged activist.
This is a powerful new model for getting young people involved in the political process.
Scholar Henry Jenkins calls it avatar activism. That comes from YouTube videos of Palestinians protesting in the occupied territories. They're dressed like the blue aliens in the movie Avatar.
The newer activism may be informed by newer stories, stories that matter deeply to the people who listen to them.
Stories like Avatar and the Harry Potter series might seem unlikely starting points towards civic engagement, but they stir something in people. The MacArthur Foundation is funding a study of the Harry Potter Alliance and other groups that use pop culture to get hardcore fans as passionate about politics.
It sparks and inspires them to challenge the world.
That impulse comes naturally to fans, says Andrew Slack of the Harry Potter Alliance.
When you hear about Darfur, you think, well, that's a different world. I can't affect that world. But when you go to a Harry Potter fan site or a Harry Potter convention, all that stuff, you're dealing with people that have already gone to a different world and experienced the life of another character. Now all they need to do is get that little shift to say, you know, wouldn't it be fun if we really took that seriously and we brought it back to our world?
More conventional progressive activism can feel a little stultifying, says Slack. At this moment, working for Darfur or net neutrality can come across as dreary, intimidating, even off-putting.
We're creating a space that's imaginative and playful and fun, as well as working on serious issues.
That's where a band called Harry and the Potters makes a huge difference. It's really popular, at least among a certain set. And it helps the Harry Potter Alliance recruit at the sort of high schools and colleges where no one shows up at Amnesty International meetings.
Being at a Harry and the Potters concert is one of the coolest experiences, the level of adrenaline that goes on in the room with all of these 17-year-old kids chanting together, hundreds of them, "The weapon we have is love."
Harry Potter, it's been said, taught a generation to love to read. Now Harry Potter is teaching them to be activists, too. Netta Ulibi, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. On the TV show The Office, Steve Carell plays the awesomely inept boss. Rainn Wilson plays one of his subordinates.
ID badges are long overdue. Security in this office park is a joke. Last year, I came to work with my spud gun in a duffel bag. I sat at my desk all day with a rifle that shoots potatoes at 60 pounds per square inch. Can you imagine if I was deranged?
That's the character Dwight Schrute, is played by Rainn Wilson. In real life, Wilson is something of a comedic philosopher. He's written a book called Soul Pancake, Chew on Life's Big Questions. And he is the most recent guest in our occasional series in which Hollywood insiders recommend DVDs. Why don't we start with the movie Days of Heaven? What's this about?
Days of Heaven is set in 1916, and the director Terrence Malick, he just paints his films. I mean, they're like watching paintings come to life.
We're in the Texas panhandle here, right?
That's right. It's got Brooke Adams and Richard Gere. He's committed a murder, and they're on the lam from the law, and they work as migrant workers for this reclusive farmer played by Sam Shepard. And it's like they've just walked into an Edward Hopper painting. Mm. And there's so little dialogue in this movie. The movie is, I don't know how long it is. It's 3 hours long. There's 8 lines of dialogue. And the girl, played by Linda Mance, she has the most outrageous voice you've ever heard in your life. And she narrates the movie. So there's this 12-year-old girl with this crazy voice like, "I remember the farmer.
They told everybody they were brother and sister. My brother didn't want nobody to know. You know how people are. You tell them something, they start talking."
When you say Edward Hopper painting, I'm imagining Victorian houses, clear skies, the sun is kind of low, the colors are very rich and bright. That's the look that you see here?
Well, you know, Edward Hopper was mostly in the cities. Is more like Andrew Wyeth meets Edward Hopper. Very sparse, mm-hmm. Very beautiful, radiant light. In fact, they shot most of the movie in what film world calls magic hour, which is just that brief time when the sun has gone down, but the sky is still completely bright. Mm. It's just exquisite.
Aren't the indoor scenes of The Office usually shot during magic hour as well?
All the time. Carell insists on it. He's just got to have that radiant light, the sun just kissing the horizon, just to frost his beautiful black eyebrows.
Now, you have another DVD you recommend here, With Nail and I. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, With Nail and I is a cult English film from the late 80s, and it's Richard E. Grant's first movie. He's a great comic actor. He was in The Player and all kinds of other movies afterwards, including the Spice Girls movie, by the way.
Okay.
And you just got to see it. Everyone quotes With Nail from the movie. I mean, they have – in England, it's a regular event to get together at a pub, and they have With Nail parties, and people will quote line by line the entire movie.
What is With Nail? Is that somebody's name?
Yeah, With Nail is – they're crazy bohemian actors living in a disgusting flat, just going on an absolute drunken, mad rampage to escape their life in the city. They go out to their Uncle Monty's cabin. The Uncle Monty is one of the greatest characters of all time. He's an enormous homosexual bon vivant.
"There is, you will agree, certain je ne sais quoi, un thing very special about a firm young carrot. Excuse me. Do help yourselves another drink."
So I mean, this sounds like a film that maybe makes you think of your day job or give you ideas for your day job, because the subject matter.
Listen, I can so relate, because when I saw that movie, I was a dirt poor actor in New York, in the late 80s, early 90s, and, you
know.
And
these guys are unemployed actors in this movie.
Oh, yeah. They're totally destitute in every way, shape, or form. I lived in an abandoned beer brewery in Brooklyn, just doing anything to kind of scrape up some money, just hoping that I would get a phone call on my voicemail service that I paid for, hoping for an audition for some Shakespeare play or something like that. So it really resonates with me, too.
Well, let's move on to one more movie here. 1993, Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused is one of Richard Linklater's first films. It's an absolute masterpiece. It's a bunch of kids graduating from high school in Austin, Texas. And it's just the whole movie takes place in one day.
Hmm.
And it also has the great honor of introducing Matthew McConaughey to the world.
Ben Affleck is also in here.
Ben Affleck plays just a horrible bully, very convincingly, I might add. And Matthew McConaughey plays a guy who graduated from the high school. No, didn't graduate from the high school, dropped out from the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a muscle car and a great kind of porn mustache.
So you're a freshman, right?
Yeah.
So tell me, man, how's this year's crop of freshman chicks looking?
And his famous line from the movie is like, "It's the great thing about high school girls. I get older and they just stay the same age."
Hmm. There are certain movies that completely flop at the box office and then take on another life. This seems to have been that kind of movie.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it when it first came out, and I think there were about 12 people out there. And I couldn't believe it. It was interesting. This is going to sound really pretentious and actorly, and I'm sorry. I apologize.
Well,
America.
You are an actor, so go ahead.
Well, you know, I do what I can. We were studying Chekhov, the playwright, in acting school when I saw it, and it's like a Chekhov play. It's like a Chekhov play with a bunch of jocks and stoners and dorks from an American high school. It's really funny and really real and really sad at the same time.
How do you watch DVDs? You watch them at home? You watch them with friends? You watch them alone?
You know, now that you know, I got a little scratch from that TV show that I do, we have a nice little media room with a big TV. So my wife and I try and really make movie nights special. The other thing that we love to do is have bad movie nights.
Uh-huh.
And we invite friends, and we have so much fun watching Troll 2. There's a great one called Birdemic that some guy in Washington State filmed with a budget of like $380 about birds attacking people. And it's,
Didn't Hitchcock do that for the considerably larger budget, I think?
Yes.
Okay.
And that would be a great double feature, actually.
Yeah.
but it's a lot of fun to have a bad movie night, too.
Rainn Wilson of The Office and author of Soul Pancake, thanks for coming by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And as you go through your day, you can catch a scene from Birdemic. Go to our website, npr.org. You can also find a link on Twitter. We are at Morning Edition and at NPR Inskeep. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.